the new developments in the Karen Reed murder trial.
This has been a wild turn of events.
I've seen a lot of things. I've never seen anything like this. This case never ceases to amaze me.
It's a spectacle. That's for sure.
It was a hung jury, so no verdict, no real ending to this case.
Karen Reed was back in court where a date was set for her to be tried once again.
There are a lot of issues in this case.
Proctor was improperly searching Karen Reed's cell phone for nude photos.
Michael Proctor, the lead investigator,
relieved of his duties.
It's always the theories that each side will put forth for a jury to decide which one is more believable.
Karen Reed was drunk and angry and hit and killed John O'Keefe when she gunned it in the snowstorm.
Karen, did you ever say I hit him? I hit him.
I did not.
There are more people here at the beginning of this than at the beginning of Johnny Depp's trial.
We're not concerned about any of the witnesses. None of the Commonwealth's witnesses are concerning us.
And once again, there was drama outside court.
There is a whole new set of legal troubles for Karen Reed. She is now facing a wrongful death lawsuit.
The lawsuit alleges that Karen Reed was drunk and reckless when she hit John O'Keefe.
It's not just Reed being sued here. The family also suing the two Canton bars from that night.
The two bars are liable for overserving her.
The FBI is investigating an investigation of a murder. That never, ever happens.
At this point, multiple jurors have been reaching out to both sides, saying that they are certain Karen Reed is not a killer.
I did not kill John O'Keefe. I've never harmed a hair on John O'Keefe's head.
We're looking at arm injuries with scratches. We're not looking at tire tracks.
There are 17 jurors, and they're coming and going with a police escort.
The investigation wasn't thorough.
This can't be good for the prosecution moving forward.
I just hope justice is served for either one, whatever it is, you know?
The fate of her life is not in her hands anymore. It's not in the hands of her attorneys. It's not in the hands of the prosecutor. It's in the hands of the jury now.
Aiden Carney, aka Turtle Boy, has been a thorn in the side of Norfolk County District Attorney's Office and law enforcement since April of 2023, when he published the first article about Karen Reed's case on his website, TB Daily News. Since then, he's made some enemies, both in Norfolk County and beyond. His aggressive approach to journalism has sparked controversy nationwide, causing the storyteller to become the story. Carney has a huge following. Between his Facebook group, Twitter, YouTube, and more, he has a group of diehard followers known as Turtle Riders that believe in the cause and seem to share the philosophy that the end justifies the means. But his polarizing approach has also earned him some harsh critics and people who would love nothing more than to take him down. I started covering this case more than a year ago, when there wasn't a huge interest in it the way that there is now. Over time, I've been shocked at the amount of people that I've observed that seem to choose what to believe about the case against Karen Reed, based more on Turtle Boy than on actual evidence. People who were part of the Free Karen Reed movement then swapped sides after hostile interactions with Carney. People who justify indefensible behavior of law enforcement and officials do it because they would rather accept that behavior than to concede that Carney could be right about something. There are countless social media accounts dedicated to trolling him and any of his followers, Facebook groups that obsess over his every move, and people who have made it their mission to try to spark outrage in as many people as possible in hopes of somehow slowing him down or impacting his following. On the very first episode of this podcast, I referred to Aiden Carney as the loudest voice in the room. And love him or hate him, his over-the-top style has brought a lot of eyes and ears to this case and to the issues in Norfolk County. The 70-page statement of facts that was presented by Detective Lieutenant Brian Tully documented various YouTube videos and posts of Carney's, all examples that Tully says violate the law and should result in an arrest warrant. The document refers to the defense filing where Karen's attorneys alleged police misconduct and a conspiracy, called Brian Albert a suspect, and said that Jen McCabe was a conspirator who took calculated steps to purge her phone of inculpatory evidence. Tully says Carney adopted those claims, and in April of 2023, began posting articles to his website and social media accounts where he, quote, adopts the defense allegations as true and makes personal attacks on the civilian witnesses, members of their family, and their friends, end quote. Carney was arrested on October 11, 2023, at his children's bus stop by multiple officers, including Tully, Fanning, and Buchanick, who have all been subjects of Carney's reporting. He was charged with witness intimidation, picketing witnesses, and conspiracy to commit intimidation for obtaining vehicle registration information from an Avon Police Department dispatcher. Carney was released, but his legal troubles and the soap opera-style drama of All Things Turtle Boy was far from over. A warrant was put out for Carney on Christmas Day for felony charges of domestic assault and battery and witness intimidation, stemming from an incident that Carney was allegedly involved in at the home of a woman named Lindsay Gattani. Boston Magazine's Catherine Elton talked to Carney while he was in Norfolk County Correctional Center during his 60-day incarceration. And in an article she wrote, she said Carney insisted that the charge was a ploy that law enforcement officials cooked up with Gattani, who was referred to in the article as a jilted lover, just to silence him. Sounds like the typical defense, right? And a lot of people didn't take his claim seriously. But less than 2 weeks later, the assault and battery charge was dismissed, and evidence has come out that shows Carney may not have been wrong about this after all. So who is Lindsay Gattani? And how did she go from sending Carney seductive selfies in a free Karen Reed t-shirt that she bought from his website to then showing up at the courthouse with signs that say Karen Reed killed a man? To understand the story and how it unfolds, you first have to know who's involved. As if this story doesn't have enough names and relationships to deal with, the drama that has floated around the perimeter of the case has a whole separate list of players who have inserted themselves in various ways and become a part of what's happening. I interviewed Aidan Carney this week, and he opened up for the first time telling me things about his charges and his enemies that he's never shared publicly before. I'll be using some of the clips from my interview with Carney, but you can find the full interview on 13thJurorPodcast.com. So let's do a quick who's who in the Turtle Boy soap opera. Mello and Cosgrove are the special prosecutors that are assigned to Carney's case. They are prosecuting him for his charges. Tully is Proctor's boss and is the lead investigator in Carney's case. Now let me introduce you to one of Carney's most outspoken enemies, Kate Peter, a.k.a. Mafia Masshole. Carney said Kate Peter used to work for him, and things weren't always so bitter between them. But their professional relationship didn't end well, which caused some bad blood.
I fired her like 4 or 5 years ago after I found out that she was stealing money. And, you know, after that, she immediately just started making, I thought she was my friend. But as it turns out, she was just a very devious person. And after she left, she started her own YouTube channel and just started spreading lies about me, like straight up lies. And I'm like, whoa, I don't even recognize this person anymore. Like, I just realized she was somebody completely different than I thought she was.
Kate Peter seemed to make it her personal mission to take Carney down.
She spends every waking minute of every waking day just thinking about me, writing about me, spreading lies about me. It's an obsession. If you go back and look at her YouTubes like over the years, it's just all about me. Her entire channel is based on hatred of this man who she just can't seem to move on from.
When Carney began covering the Karen Reed case, he thought that he and Kate Peter would be parting ways, moving on and focusing on different things. But that didn't last.
When this Karen Reed story started, I'm like, great, I can do this story that has nothing to do with her whatsoever, and we can move on with our lives. Awesome. Nope, 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 nope. I really did not want her to become part of this story because she just kind of latches on to everything I do, has been doing this for years. Anyone who's been following me knows this.
On a YouTube show, Kate Peter was asked how she got involved in the Karen Reed case. Her immediate answer was, I hate Turtle Boy.
How did you get interested, and how do you seem to know everything about this case?
So I hate Turtle Boy. That's pretty much all that. I mean, so I tend to profile people anyway. I've been on and off with him for years, battling back and forth. I actually used to work for him. So there was about a 2-year period when I wrote for his blog. I pretty much co-ran the blog. I'm not thrilled to admit that now, but it is the truth. Unfortunately, that is what I did. And when I separated from the blog, he went on the attack. So it's been kind of back and forth ever since.
Kate Peter said she began receiving emails telling her to look at what Carney was covering now. So she decided to look into it.
I kind of look into it. I read the first blog that he writes and I'm like, great, he's gotten into true crime. This conspiracy theory is batshit bananas insane. This is not going to get any traction, and RIP Turtle Boy, pretty much. And that didn't happen.
Carney's coverage of the trial began getting some traction, and the theory that Kate Peter had brushed off as crazy was being widely discussed. She said that she doesn't cover true crime, but with Carney covering the story, now Kate became involved. Carney said that whatever side he believed in, she would automatically take the opposite.
She, because I took a pro-Karen Reed position, she had to take a anti-Karen Reed position. It's just, if I had said Karen Reed was guilty, she would say the opposite. So,
Kate Peter has a few nicknames, but to make things less confusing, I'll refer to her as KP. KP seemed to devote some of her time to anti-Turtle Boy blogs and videos, and as Carney's coverage of the case began to gain steam, KP's crusade against him caught the attention of some of the people that Carney was accusing of actually being responsible for John O'Keefe's death.
After she started talking about me nonstop on her channel about Karen Reed and whatnot, that's when the McAlberts found her.
So I ended up getting some emails from some members of John O'Keefe's family. They had read a blog series that I had written on Turtle Boy maybe, you know, 2-3 years ago. And they originally came to me in my email and said, hey, do you have any more dirt on this guy? He's terrorizing our family.
And she just acted like she was their savior and biggest spokesperson. And, you know, next thing you know, she's behind the scenes working with these same corrupt cops to have me framed for witness intimidation.
KP has reached out to or been in contact with just about everyone who is against Carney. The enemy of her enemy is her friend. She says that she has a team of people that help with research and investigation into Carney and what his connection to Karen Reed is, and pretty much anyone who supports Karen Reed, believes in her innocence, or even just questions her guilt. KP will end up being the main topic of conversation for the second Bedrow letter because of her working as a source for the police and using her alliances to exploit the criminal justice system in furtherance of her effort to ruin Carney. The next name you need to know is Leah Genduso. Here's Carney explaining his connection to her.
One of the bigger stories I've ever published was about, I found out that a state trooper by the name of Leah Genduso, who is prominent around here, like she was featured in on billboards as, like, you know, she's an attractive young female cop who was in the canine unit. Well, I found out through an anonymous source that Leah Genduso testified in front of in federal court for the United States Attorney's Office. She was state's witness against her ex-boyfriend Sean Bucci in, I think it was like 2007. Sean Bucci and her sold drugs together. It was just weed, but, you know, it is what it is. That wasn't the big deal. The big deal was the money laundering. They laundered like $350,000 in money to a shady lawyer by the name of Gary Zarola, who was just sentenced for rape, actually. He's been charged with rape 4 times. And so that's the kind of people that she got hooked up with. And she ratted on the boyfriend, avoided a prison sentence herself by doing that, and somehow became a state trooper after that, despite the fact that the state police themselves had investigated her. So I get her whole transcript and I'm like, this is huge news. Like, this is a state trooper. I write about it. She is let go that day. To their credit, with her, they cut her off immediately and she was fired within a couple months completely. Like, she was not, took her badge, her gun, everything. So she hated me, obviously, because I ruined her life.
Genduso wrote a book sharing some of her experience and the hard time that she has had since Carney's article was written. She said that she was working out at the barracks gym when someone texted her the blog, and she realized at that moment that her life was over and she would no longer have the job that she loved, working as a canine handler for the Massachusetts State Police. Genduso wrote that she had a tough childhood, began dating a marijuana dealer, broke a lot of laws, got busted, was able to still eventually get her dream job with Massachusetts State Police, and then lost it when Carney wrote the article exposing her past and the scandal around how she was hired. Genduso said that her life became very difficult after that. She was dishonorably discharged, struggled with finances and finding employment, and went through a really dark time. She says that she wasn't dishonest about her past, that there were multiple people who knew, and that the colonel had admitted that, but she was thrown under the bus. Carney said it was a few years later when he heard from her again.
And then a couple years later, I wrote a story about a guy she was dating by the name of Landon Steele, who was just this big scamming fake veteran. And she messaged me and said, I want to thank you for helping me get away from Landon Steele. Your articles really, helped me escape this abusive guy and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay. And then she agreed to come on my show. We did an interview and was, she looked good. Like she was, batting her eyes and stuff like that. There was a lot of chemistry there, like people were saying. And she was flirting with me because this is what she does. Next thing you know, she's real friendly. She starts appearing in the chat on my live streams. She asked me out to go out for a drink. I did. Next thing you know, here we are. And we have a little thing and it goes on for a few months.
It seems like a very unlikely couple given what happened. But somehow, apparently, romance temporarily blossomed. It didn't last, though, and it didn't end on good terms. Fueled by anger with revenge on her mind, Carney said that Genduso teamed up with the woman who had made it her mission to take Carney down, KP.
It doesn't end well, and she decides that she is going to team up with Kate Peter and send her a whole bunch of nudes, because Massachusetts was one of two states at the time that has no revenge pornography laws. So she's next. You might have seen, unfortunately, there's some pictures of me out there on the internet that were released by this vengeful woman. She sent videos of me, solos, to Kate Peter, who then shared them on social media.
So with KP and Genduso joining forces, Carney was outnumbered. But if you know anything about Turtle Boy, he's not the type to go quietly. Carney admitted in a hearing to Retaliation in Kind when the photos and videos of him were released. We'll be right back after this. And that brings us to our third and final member of the Revengers, Lindsay Gattani. Like so many of Carney's biggest critics, their relationship began as friend, not foe. Lindsay was once one of the Turtle Boy followers that she is now so scathingly critical of. She actually reached out to Carney on September 4th of 2023, sending him a mirror selfie and a free Karen Reed t-shirt that had been purchased from Carney's website, and some very flirtatious texts.
No doubt that she was like, I'm throwing myself at you. She called me daddy. I'm like, okay, I can see where this is going.
Carney said in a hearing on January 8th of this year that Gattani was offering a physical relationship, which he took her up on. He met her in person for the first time on September 15th, a week and a half after their messages began.
So she reached out to you?
That's right.
And what was the nature of that?
She was hitting on me, flirting with me, telling me she wanted sex. And so I agreed to meet with her for sex on September 15th.
There was a suggestion from her about a sexual relationship?
Oh, yes.
And did you take her up on that?
I did.
Carney was still married at the time. He said he was sleeping on the couch and not in a good place with his wife. When his relationship with Gattani began, it began as something physical that wasn't supposed to be serious.
It turned serious, but it wasn't supposed to be. Like, it was like every Friday night I would go over there. She has four kids, so she couldn't like leave. So I would just go over there, and then drive home.
Things shifted in their relationship in October of 2023 when Carney was arrested for witness intimidation. He wasn't charged with witness intimidation against Brian Albert because he was living in a different county. So Carney was concerned that those charges were coming and he would be arrested again, which made him fearful of being home. He began staying with Gattani more often and began to see a side of her that he said he hadn't seen before.
And that's when things started turning, like I saw a different side of her. Like she started like swearing at me and telling me I'm this horrible person.
Carney described a night around mid-October in which he said Gattani lashed out at him.
The first night we actually went out and like went to a bar and got drinks. She was on the way home. She like lashed out at me and started telling me what a horrible person I am. And you're a piece of shit and you're so cocky and blah, 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 blah. And so when we got back, I'm like, okay, well, that's the end of this relationship. Like, no, she wanted to hook up after that.
Carney said he should have just walked away at that time, but he seemed to be in a different place at the time where drama drew him in rather than push him away.
Maybe I was a little addicted to crazy at the time. I'm no longer into that. I want to be very clear. But at the time, I guess I was just looking for a thrill, And look where it landed. I ended up in jail over it. So that let that be a lesson.
Carney said that a cycle developed where there would be fights and lashing out, followed by what he referred to as love bombs, where Gattani would apologize and shower him with love and attention, keeping him in the hamster wheel of toxicity.
I would see the signs of crazy. She would lash out at me a lot. And then she would come back to me and be like, I think you're the most wonderful person. I'm so sorry if I lash out like that. I just got out of an abusive relationship. It was like love bombing, you know, love bombing and then followed by insanity. And it was just this cycle that continued. And I could have got off the ride whenever I wanted to until the fake baby came. And that kicked things up a notch.
So let's talk about the quote unquote fake baby. There's a reason that Carney believes the baby was fake, just a ploy to get his attention and emotionally manipulate him. Carney said that his mental health was taking a big hit. He had just gone to court for the witness intimidation charges, and the judge came down on him extremely hard. His marriage was in a bad place. He was essentially living a double life. His relationship with Gattani was becoming increasingly more toxic, and he was struggling. That's when he says the baby first came up.
So we had a court like a week before with Judge Krupp, and he came down with a decision that basically was verbal judo. Like, it was smacking me down. Like, you're not a real journalist. You're breaking the law. You're a bad person, Turtle Boy. It was sucked. And I'm not going to lie. Like, I was experiencing some serious depression at the time. And like that just added on to it. It's like that was like a real low point when that happened. And so her, like, I, pub, like privately with me, she's telling me, oh, don't worry about that. You're going to do fine. I believe in you. I care about you so much and blah, 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 blah. Well, then on November 9th, she's like being weird and I'm like, you know, not answering me. And so I'm like, what's wrong? Like, is something wrong? And so I had her on the phone and I said, what's wrong? And she wouldn't tell me. And I'm like, is your cat dead? Is that, like, what happened? And then I'm like, are you pregnant? And then she just didn't respond.
Carney thinks that when he was asking Gattani about what was wrong and why she was acting strange, him mentioning her being pregnant as a possible reason that she's behaving different is what made her decide to take that and run with it.
And I think that she just got like, oh yeah, I'm going to go with that one, you know, because she just didn't respond. And I'm like, are you pregnant? I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it.
Carney said that on November 9th, Gattani told him through text that she was pregnant, which ended up pushing him further into the mental darkness that he was experiencing at the time.
And then finally she confirmed it via text. Yeah, don't worry. I'm going to take care of it. I'm like, no, I don't want to force you into anything. Like, we should do this together, whatever, if we do. Like, I'm not going to be one of those guys. And, you know, so I thought she was pregnant. And when you think that that happens, right, and you're living at home. I mean, I should have got divorced a long time ago, but, you know, I was living at home, sleeping on the couch, living this double life. And, you know, I now have been baby on. I'm like, what with this crazy person? And I'm like, yeah, add that on to the pile of mental shit I'm dealing with right now with felony charges and all this. And there's no one I can tell. It's not like I can tell anyone this shit because this is like a secret. You know what I mean? Like, the whole thing was mental health.
Carney said the pressure of everything became too much, and he basically had a mental breakdown. He sent Gattani a video during this breakdown, and he said that she shared it to further hurt him.
And you might have seen a video of me out there that she has released and exploited, in which I'm like walking down the street in the middle of the night. So I was like, that was in the middle of a really bad panic attack I had one night when it just all exploded. Like, she was just fucking with me, telling me, I'm going to get an abortion, and then no, I'm not. And this going back and forth, I didn't care what she did. I was willing to support whatever she did. So that, and I'm like, I can't deal with this anymore. And I just went for a walk in the middle of the dark, and she wasn't answering any of my calls or whatever. And so I just sent her a video. I'm just like, look it, I'm having a freaking mental health episode right now because I don't know what to do. My life's falling apart and I just want to freaking disappear. And I just hope I get hit by a truck. I think I said, I don't know what I said on that tape because I've never watched it. I sent it to her and she has since shared that to mock me. You know what I mean? To mock, just like, because that's, it's been evil. Like, shared that for the world to see. And look at, see, he was obsessed with her and he did this and that. I was in the middle of a mental health crisis because I thought I was having a baby with a lunatic.
Here is part of that video.
So I have no fucking clue where I am. I'm on a fucking road right now. But I just wanted to say goodbye and that I love you. That's all. That's all I really wanted to say to you. You have no idea the thoughts that go through my head, Lindsay. You have no fucking clue. I hear shit. I battle it fucking constantly. And I reached out to you tonight because I really thought you were fucking different. I really thought you were fucking different. I was really hoping you were fucking different. You can't even fucking talk to me. But I just wanted to let you know that you made the last 2 months of my life worth living. And I just can't do it anymore. But I love you. I really do. And I'm sorry.
Carney said that Gattani went back and forth the entire time about whether or not she wanted to keep the baby that she had just told him about. He said that he told her that it was her decision, but just wanted her to make up her mind so that he could prepare himself for whatever she chose.
And she was going back and forth saying that, well, one day she's going to have an abortion and the other day she's not. And I'm like, I don't care what you do. Can you just please tell me so I'm prepared? Like, that's all, you know, whatever you do, I'm going to support, but just let me know, please.
Carney said that Gattani continued flip-flopping on what she was going to do, and he thinks that that was just a way to string him along. But he says now that he believes that Gattani was never actually pregnant with his baby in the first place.
She's just using it to string me along. She never showed me at the time. I never thought to ask for, like, you know, proof or anything, because who would lie about that? Like, I never... And so... And she was pretending to be sick a lot and having cramps and, you know, shit you'd have when you're first pregnant. And so it was believable.
The baby situation isn't the only thing that Gattani was flip-flopping on at the time. She was apparently living somewhat of a double life with her real life and another online persona that she had created. Carney took Gattani to a Halloween party fundraiser for Karen Reed in late October of 2023. Photos were taken of Gattani and sent out with her name. And apparently this kind of freaked her out. Unbeknownst to Carney at the time, Gattani then created a fake Twitter profile that went by the name of Jane. Jane seemed to be on the anti-Turtle Boy and anti-Karen Reed side, and Gattani flipped back and forth between that profile and her own pro-Turtle Boy and pro-Karen Reed profile. The fake Jane account is mentioned in the Bedrow letters. Here's Carney explaining the creation of that account.
Around late October, this troll account called Troll Homeo on Twitter posted that Aiden's out with a new brunette tonight. And Kate makes a post saying, how's Lindsay doing? And it's like, oh, for fuck's sake. Lindsay saw this and she's like, I'm about to get doxxed by this woman. And so Lindsay creates an alter ego on Twitter called Jane. And Jane, because we have all Jane's, we know the date of the creation of the account, all the messages she's ever sent. Jane starts communicating with Kate and Troll Homeo in like late October, early November. The character of Jane was intended, it was supposed to pretend to be Lindsay's friend. Jane was Lindsay's friend. And Jane was going to them and telling them, oh, my friend Lindsay, she's dating Aiden and I'm trying to get her away from him because he's such a scumbag, but please don't dox her. It was her way. Jane was her way of preventing Lindsay from getting treated like shit and attacked by Kate. She preemptively made Jane to do that. And Jane would trash me like while I'm out, like for getting drinks for her. And she's telling me, oh, I can't wait to see you later. Oh, Jane's online saying, ah, Turtle Boy is such a piece of shit. Look at him. He's such a fucking idiot. Like saying the horrible shit about me. Like she would come to my court dates, be supportive in person. Like, oh, tell Tim Bradle he did such a good job today. Meanwhile, Jane's on Twitter. Tim Bradle's the worst lawyer I've ever seen. What a fucking moron. Jane was, basically her alter ego that she used to trash me while publicly supporting me and coming to my court dates and whatnot.
Carney said that Gattani exposed herself as the fake Jane account one day by reposting a screenshot that Carney had sent her, but she posted it on the fake Jane account. Carney noticed and confronted her.
And so I go to her and I'm like, what did you, are you Jane? I'm like, she's like, what? That's ridiculous. That account hates on you. How could that be me? Like she blamed this woman, Grace, the babysitter, poor Grace. and blames Grace. Grace, I told her about that. I can't believe Grace is doing this. And I'm like, well, I guess Grace is a little bit ratchet. She had convinced me Grace is ratchet.
So while she is secretly on this Jane account interacting on social media with Carney's biggest enemies, even saying that she hopes Carney ends up in jail for the charges that he's facing in his witness intimidation case, Gattani is also texting Carney that she's pregnant with his baby. Carney said a few weeks after he was told that she was pregnant, Gattani told him that she had decided to have an abortion, despite her previous comments that she was against them. She asked Carney to come stay with her on the night of November 26th so that he could drive her to a clinic in Brookline the next day. Carney said that he agreed, but the next morning when they woke up, Gattani told him that she didn't want him to come. She wanted to do this alone. He said okay, and he went to a Panera Bread in Worcester to wait on her in case she changed her mind or needed a ride home. At around 9:30, Carney said that he received a picture and a text from Gattani.
She sends me a picture of what she claims is she's at a Planned Parenthood, she says, in Brookline. And I'm like, what's going on? And then she's like, I can't do it. And I'm like, so I call her on the phone. I'm like, what's going on? Oh, you're making me get this abortion. And I'm like, I'm not making you do anything. What are you talking about? I'm like, can you talk to someone? Like, you don't have to be. I'll come get you right now. If you need a ride, are you okay?
Carney said in a hearing that he told Gattani that because of the distance between them, only one of them could have custody. He said that Gattani said that she was just going to do it. She was going to go through with the abortion, and she hung up the phone.
I said, you can do what you want, but the fact of the matter is that we live an hour away from each other, so only one of us can have custody. She hung up the phone and said she was going to do it.
Carney said he spent 6 hours waiting at the Panera Bread, texting Gattani, telling her that it's okay if she didn't do it, asking her if she was all right, and saying that he was there to support her. He said he tried calling her, but she never responded to any of it.
And she didn't respond to any of my texts the entire day or calls. So I'm sitting there. I sat in a Panera Bread in Worcester all day waiting to hear back from her. Yeah, 6 hours. Just sat there. And I'm like, she's not calling me back. And I'm like, because I don't know what I'm going to do. Because I wanted to be near the highway. It was right by the highway. And she just didn't call me back. So finally, I went home and I kept calling. And she didn't answer. I went to bed. I had court the next day.
Carney said he went to bed that night not knowing if she was pregnant or if she had had an abortion or if she was okay. She never would respond to anything. The following day, Carney had a court hearing for the pending charges against him.
I go to court on November 28th and she parks next to me. I'm like, what?
Carney says he met up with Gattani after the hearing at a Dunkin' Donuts where she told him that she had gone through with the abortion. She started crying. Carney said that he consoled her. And then she asked him if they could be in a relationship, which wasn't something that he was interested in.
I'm like, so what happened? And she's like, I did it for you. You made me do it. And I'm like, I gave her a hug. And I'm like, do you need anything? Are you okay? And blah, blah, blah. And no, just, is there any way we can be together? And I'm like, maybe, like, long way away, you know? I'm trying to do the slow fade at this point.
For the next week, Gattani told Carney that she was traumatized because of the abortion, and she was angry with him because she felt like he forced her into it.
Over the next week, she sends me message after message blaming me, saying I'm like, you made me do this. I'm in mental pain and physical pain of this and blah, 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 blah.
After about a week of this, Carney said that Gattani suddenly flipped everything around, telling him that she had been lying about going through with the abortion just to test him and that she was actually still pregnant.
She's like, well, guess what? I was just testing you. I didn't even have an abortion and I'm so glad about it. I'm like, bro, you have been for the last week telling me that I made you get this and you're experiencing mental pain for this. And I'm like, I'm done.
Carney said he was shocked. He had been deceived for an entire week, with Gattani trying to make him feel guilty about an abortion that she now says that she didn't even have. He didn't want anything to do with her at that point, but he says that she kept calling, and the next day, she finally convinced him to answer.
So the next day, December 6th, she tells me, she goes, I'm going to pack my kids up and come to your house now if you don't answer. So I answer. And we make plans to meet the next day to talk about this. Okay. And we meet in a parking lot in this town called Boylston near me. And she shows up driving her minivan, piss drunk. And she's drinking vodka out of a bottle, out of a water bottle. And she's like crying like she always is and yelling at me. And I'm like, holy shit. And I'm really, because she was drinking so much, I'm like, there's no fucking way she can be pregnant. If she's pregnant, then this is a fetal alcohol baby. Like, we have a situation here. And this is not going to end well.
Carney said it was around noon when they met up in that parking lot. And even though Gattani was overly intoxicated, she said that she was going to pick up her kids at daycare when she left there. Carney began to doubt whether or not Gattani was even pregnant. This wasn't the first time that he had seen her drunk since she said that she was pregnant. He says that she was drunk just about every time he saw her. They would go out drinking. She would get blackout drunk. She lied about the abortion. So it seemed like there were just too many red flags, and he questioned if any of it was ever real. We'll be right back after this. Carney said Gattani was toxic and he wanted to leave her, but every time he tried, she would get angry. According to the court hearing, Gattani told Carney that she had made another appointment at the clinic in Brookline to have an abortion, and she tells Carney, asking him for a ride and asking him to sleep over that night to comfort her. So he agreed. That morning, she said that she had changed her mind and was going to take an abortion pill instead. She said that she would go and take one in front of the doctor in the morning, and she would need to take the other four at night. Gattani told Carney that it's painful and she needs him to stay there in case she's in pain or needs to go to the hospital. He said he was skeptical about it and had asked some other women about the process, and he had heard some of what Gattani was telling him was inconsistent with what other pregnant women had gone through, but he agreed to stay.
December 8th, she says that I've taken the pill, right? And I have to take four more. Like, you take one with the doctor and then you take four more to extricate it, right? She's like, I'm like, and she goes, and it hurts and I need you here with me when this happens. Okay, fair enough. And so I drive there that night and she wants to go out. So we go out, she gets drunk and then wakes up in the morning and she says, I forgot to take the pills. You have to come back again tonight on December 9th. And I'm like, no more games. This is bullshit. I don't think you're pregnant. Like, this is a fucking game. This is just your way of keeping me around. I'm out of here. And I'm not canceling the live show for this. And because this is my job, you know, this is how I make a living.
Carney tried to tell Gattani that she could just take the pills now. At that point, it was 5:30 a.m. and he said that it wasn't too late. Gattani refused and he said that she yelled at him. Carney didn't even believe that she was pregnant anymore, so Gattani sent him a picture of a positive pregnancy test. When he told her that he wasn't canceling his live show that night to come back again, he said that she became enraged, texted him close to 100 times during the next few hours, including during his live show that night, threatening him.
Well, during the show, she's rage texting me, telling me I'm going to regret this. She leaves a voicemail saying that I'm going to drop that fetal alcohol baby up at your house and party the fucking night away. This is going to be your biggest regret you've ever made. I'm going to fucking destroy you. All these threats. And I'm just ignoring it.
Carney said that Gattani told him if he thinks 9 felonies are bad, wait till he sees what's coming next. Then she began contacting all of Carney's enemies and building a plan.
The day that I wouldn't go over there is when, out of rage, because she couldn't control me anymore, she decides to reach out to people who want to destroy me, and she's going to team up with them to try to put me in jail. As it turns out, now that we have her phone extraction, because I don't talk to her for like a week or so, during this time, on December 9th, she is messaging Leah Genduso and Kate Peter, and she is making plans to have them hook her up with Ken Mello, who she meets with on December 11th, and then she meets with Tully on December 14th. And they are plotting to, put me in jail. Like, they put that in messages a million times. We are trying to put him in jail. I fucking hate him. We got to destroy him.
This is something that I probably wouldn't believe if it wasn't in a phone extraction. But when Carney wouldn't go back over there that night, Gattani actually reached out to his biggest enemies and made plans to talk to the prosecutor in his case, Ken Mello, and Detective Lieutenant Tully, the lead investigator on his case, all to try to work to get him locked up. So, was the baby ever real? Carney said that he believed that they were safe during their physical interactions, although he said he had heard of women getting pregnant anyway, so he thought maybe it was possible. But looking back, he says he doesn't believe that she was pregnant because it turns out that the pictures that she sent him were not what she represented them to be.
She sends me a freaking picture of a positive pregnancy test. I have since run the metadata on that pregnancy test, and it was taken in May of 2023 before I met her. As it turns out, she has since testified at the grand jury that she was pregnant in May.
During a hearing in January of this year, Carney's attorney, Tim Bradle, questioned Gattani about sending a pregnancy test picture to Carney to convince him that she's pregnant with his baby, and points out that the metadata shows that the picture was actually from May of 2023, months before she had ever met Carney. Gattani says that she doesn't know what he's talking about.
You sent Mr. Carney a picture of a pregnancy test that was from May of 2023, didn't you?
I don't know what you're talking about.
The pregnancy test picture was a screenshot of a pregnancy test from well before you were ever with Mr. Carney. Isn't that correct?
Gattani says that she doesn't want to have to talk about her personal medical situations. And Bradle explains the relevance of this to the judge.
Miss Gattani sent Mr. Carney a picture of a pregnancy test, right? Because Mr. Carney was sick, didn't believe that she was pregnant, and that she was using the pregnancy to manipulate him into coming over, not leaving, staying with her, and manipulating him.
Bradle is allowed to question Gattani about this, and while she agrees that she sent the photo to Carney, she denies that she was trying to deceive him, and she says that she doesn't know what he's talking about when he asks about the metadata.
Ms. Gattani, isn't it true that you used a photograph of old pregnancy tests from May 2023 to trick Mr. Carney into thinking you were pregnant by him in November, December of 2023?
No, I did not try to. No.
Did you do that or not?
No, I did not try to trick him.
My question is, did you present those photographs to Mr. Carney?
I presented the photographs.
Okay. So we agree that you deceived him.
No.
You presented photographs from May of 2023 showing that there was a positive pregnancy test, right?
I don't know what you're talking about.
You don't know what I'm talking about.
But that's not all. Gattani sends Carney a picture while she's at that abortion clinic, and the metadata on that also gets Gattani caught in a lie.
The picture from the clinic in that she sent me on November 27th, the metadata on that is from December of 2021, from a previous time at the abortion clinic that she just has in her phone and sends to me.
Carney said that Gattani also lied about her position on being pro-life, scamming him into believing what she wanted him to believe in order to manipulate him.
The whole time she was messaging me, this is another thing. She was telling me that, like, oh, I'm so fundamentally pro-life. I believe it's a baby. I can never have an abortion. It goes against everything I believe in. She's had a bunch of them. Like, because we have her phone extraction now. It's like, it was all a scam. The whole thing was a fucking scam.
So how do we know what's true and what's not? These aren't the only apparent lies that came from Gattani, so it's hard to know what to believe or what's real. And at the time that she sent the photos, Carney hadn't yet looked at the metadata, so he didn't even know that they were fake. It all seems like a soap opera, right? And you may be wondering what this drama has to do with the case against Karen Reed, or the case against Aiden Carney. But what happened when Carney and Gattani broke up has become a huge part of this story, in a way that nobody could have anticipated. Gattani was furious at Aiden Carney and began reaching out to the people who wanted to take him down. From the outside, it looked like a scorned woman deciding if she can't have him, no one can. She contacts Leah Genduso and Kate Peter, and these three women, who all feel scorned by Carney in some way, form a team that I've been referring to as the Revengers. Although Gattani has, at this point, now made an effort to befriend KP and Genduso, she still doesn't tell them that she's the person behind the fake Jane account on Twitter. Remember, fake Jane has also been talking to KP, and at this point, she doesn't know yet that it was Gattani all along. Within 2 days of the breakup, Gattani, KP, and Genduso are all in full discussion on how to take Carney down. And KP reveals to Gattani that she has Ken Mello's personal cell phone number. As a reminder, Ken Mello is the special prosecutor that was brought in to prosecute Aiden Carney for the witness intimidation charges that he's facing. So Lindsay Gattani has now gone from showing up to Carney's court hearings and supporting him to now working with the Revengers to actually contact his prosecutor to try to help get him locked up. Here's where things begin to take a major turn, and this becomes about much more than just three scorned women. Kate Peter, or KP, and Lindsay Gattani have a text conversation just 2 days after Gattani and Carney's breakup. KP tells Gattani that she has Special Prosecutor Mello's personal cell phone number and that she would call him to feel out the situation to see if there's anything that can be done. She says that Gattani had been asking the day before for Tully's phone number. He's the lead investigator in Carney's case, but she tells Gattani that it's better to just go straight to Prosecutor Mello at this point. KP tells Gattani that Mello's personal cell phone can't be FOIA'd, meaning that since it's his personal line, the Freedom of Information Act doesn't apply, and journalists aren't able to request those records or documents. The Freedom of Information Act requests, or FOIA requests, are often the way that we get information that isn't made publicly available automatically. Carney has done multiple FOIA requests and received some information through work emails that gave some insight into certain things that the district attorney's office was doing. For example, when they decided to use a former FBI agent with a Twitter following to spread the information that they wanted spread. FOIA requests can give us access to a lot of information, and it's a way to keep a check on those in public offices and positions of power. It helps prevent corruption and keeps deals and actions from being done in the dark. That doesn't mean that you can just put in a FOIA request and get anything and everything that you want, as long as it was done under work emails and phones, but the public is entitled to certain information and certain things can be released. So, KP tells Gattani that since she has Special Prosecutor Mello's personal cell phone line, those conversations that she's having with him that are not personal in nature won't be recorded and won't be available through FOIA requests. KP also tells Gattani that she's going to work on getting her some legal protection, assuring her that Gattani has some information that would be an incentive for the powers that be to protect her. She also asks Gattani not to tell anyone that they spoke. After Gattani speaks to Mello, she reaches back out to Gattani, telling her that she spoke to Mello off the record, gave him some specifics about Gattani and Carney, and she says that Mello assured her that he would have Carney arrested if he threatened or blackmailed her. Now, in the Bedro letters, this conversation exchange is cited, and I'm going to get into the entire legal arguments of the letters after we finish walking through the timeline of events. The same day that Gattani is having this conversation with KP, she also gets a text that also includes a media file from Leah Genduso. Here's Carney discussing that exchange.
And we've read Leah's messages, and in the Bedro letters, you see that Leah sends her some sort of audio file, which we can't hear, and says, "Oh my God, I just got a great idea." And Lindsay listens to the audio and says, "Oh my God, why didn't I think of that? We can get him on these bogus witness intimidation charges and beat him at his own game." And I guess she thought we'd never see these messages.
A little background here. While all of this is going on, Kate Peter also has restraining orders against her and charges for harassment and felony witness intimidation.
She has three open charges right now for violating a restraining order against two against Laura Murray, one against me. And then she has a felony witness intimidation charge against me and a felony witness intimidation charge against Lauren. So four courts, four bails, and two felonies. and a partridge in a pear tree.
There was a criminal complaint filed against KP dating back to November of 2022, and she was charged with harassment and a prevention order was put in place to keep her from coming within 50 yards of a woman named Lauren Murray, who is a friend of Carney's. Lauren is also a former love interest of Carney's, but they have remained friends, which Carney says has made her a target for both KP and Lauren Gattani. KP had allegedly been harassing Lauren, which caused her to file the complaint, and a restraining order was put in place. According to the court docket, KP violated that protection order, and in October of last year entered a plea acknowledging sufficient facts entered to prove her guilt. The charge of the violation was continued without finding, and she was ordered to abide by the restraining order and also not post anything on social media about her victim. There was another violation of the restraining order by KP this year, and in September, the judge found that KP was guilty, and she received 30 days of community service, and her probation was extended for 3 more months. I noticed in one of the cases there was a motion to revise or revoke KP's bail or conditions of release. That was filed in August of this year, but it was denied. And it seems odd that given that she has multiple violations that they wouldn't revoke the bond, but I guess she can't keep providing Norfolk County with information about Carney if her bond gets revoked, right? We'll be right back after this. Carney is a witness in the case against KP, and she has been charged with witness intimidation against him, and also harassment. These are the charges that the Revengers are referring to. Gattani actually refers to these charges in this case in a text to KP, saying that Turtle Boy thinks that the case is being moved out of Norfolk County because he is a conflict of interest. But she laughs, saying that he has no idea that it's because Kate herself is actually working with the police. This isn't the first legal battle between Carney and Kate Peter, though. They've been going at this for years. KP filed for a protection order against Carney in 2020, and he filed one against her after that, saying that she hacked into his Facebook account, which she still had the passwords for because of working for him, to write a threatening comment to herself in order to make it appear that he had violated the order so that she could get him locked up. There are years of these two going back and forth. Something else that stands out in this exchange between Gattani and Leah Genduso is that Leah actually texts Gattani that going to Mello and becoming a part of this will help be another stepping stool into getting Carney locked up for a substantial amount of time. She says that Carney will have a big reality check and thinks that he will be in jail before summer. Less than 20 minutes later, Genduso sends a text in all caps saying, "Holy crap." Then she says that she just thought of something. The next text reads, "OMG, OMG, OMG." 1 second later, she sends an audio file. Gattani responds, saying she's listening now, and then, just under 2 minutes later, says, "OMG, did not even think of that." Genduso said that it took her all day for the light to come on, and Gattani tells her that she can't believe that she and Kate Peter didn't think about it either because they had been talking about these bogus witness intimidation charges that he filed on her and how he is considered a witness now. She says, "OMG, the joy it would give me to play him at his own game." In a social media post, Gattani posts a screenshot of part of this conversation where she says it's not even playing, though, because she says it's all true. Bettero asks for that media file, pointing out that it is significant because it appears to have played a significant role in Gattani's effort to have Mello make her a witness. It starts becoming clear to Carney that Gattani has now befriended KP. On December 13th, just a few days after their split, KP posts the names of two people that Carney has been speaking to about doing a documentary on this case. Carney said that he had told Gattani those two names, so when KP posted them, he knew that she must have told her. Carney also says that KP is known to harass people that are associated with him, so because of that, the documentary was put on hold. Meanwhile, Gattani's phone extraction shows that she is working with KP to set up a meeting with the Massachusetts State Police. Gattani has been talking to KP and Genduso for days now, discussing how to go about things so that she can get Carney locked up. In her conversation with Genduso days earlier, Gattani even references Prosecutor Mello being their only hope.
And so they're like, yeah, they go, Mello is our only hope. We're going to get you in touch with Mello and we're going to get him in jail and he's going to get raped by Bubba and having all this shit. And I'm like, deranged, absolutely deranged.
Gattani still hasn't told KP that she's the one behind the Jane account. And on December 13th, the night before she meets with state police, it seems like Gattani starts realizing that by meeting with state police, she could potentially have her phone analyzed and they could realize that she's Jane. So why does this matter? This Jane account was violating the same witness intimidation statute that she herself, along with KP and Genduso, were seeking to exploit to get Carney behind bars. So while she's trying to have him locked up for violating the statute, she's violating the statute from an anonymous account. In text to KP, Gattani says she's worried for Jane, asking if what she did was considered witness intimidation, and telling KP that she will be calling her again before her meeting the next day with more questions. On December 14th, Gattani has her meeting with Massachusetts State Police, including Detective Lieutenant Tully. She sends a text message to Kate Peter just after 3 p.m., letting her know that they just left. So, what did they talk about? And what did Gattani's new bestie, KP, have to say about it? Well, that part is hard to say because despite having a phone extraction that included years of information, somehow there are critical messages missing from the report that was handed over to the defense. Every response from Kate Peter about the conversation that Gattani had with Tully and the Massachusetts State Police from this day is missing. In the next episode, we get into the controversy that seems too wild to be true, but seems to have plenty of evidence to support it. Why is Kate Peter wanting Gattani to have a conversation with Prosecutor Mello on his private line so that it can't be discoverable? Why are all of the responses in the conversation about Gattani's meeting with Tully missing from the report that the Massachusetts State Police provided to the defense? It seems fishy that the missing items are all related to the law enforcement agency that prepared the report, their source of information against Carney, and the prosecutor in Carney's case. And it gets worse. There's a jury summons for a jury that had already been completed. Texts between Gattani and Tully that are missing from the report. Texts between Gattani and Mello that are missing. And everything starts to come together to paint a picture of deceit. And when Bettereau calls it all out, Tully is suddenly rehomed. You don't want to miss what's next. My name is Brandy Churchwell, creator of 13th Juror Podcast. If you're enjoying it, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and share this episode with your friends. For more information, photos, and episode guides, visit our website at 13thjurorpodcast.com.